Well, good morning, 4th Avenue. You are looking and sounding good this morning. I'm glad you're here. So there is a story told of a third grade Sunday school class filled with young and eager minds whose teacher had built her lesson around the fifth commandment. And I know you're all adults right now thinking, what, the fifth? Which one's the fifth? Honor your father and your mother. A very commendable commandment for our children to be focusing, I believe. And it's also a commandment that applies to adults. In other words, there isn't a statute of limitations on that command. But at a certain point in her lesson, the third grade teacher said to her young students who were sitting around her, she said, "We've been talking about honoring our mommies and our daddies. But does anyone know a commandment about brothers and sisters?" One excited little girl's hand shot into the air, and she blurted out, "You shall not kill." Yep. Okay. Now, I would argue that that is a theologically sound answer to the question. I would argue that she was more on target that morning than either her teacher or she understood. You see, Jesus had already taught in the Sermon on the Mount that anger and judgment and scorn towards your brothers and your sisters is to be equated with murder. Therefore, theologically speaking, the little third grade girl was absolutely correct in her response. A fact that we would do well to accept is that Jesus knew us very well, and he also knows our struggles. He knows our biggest obstacles that stand in the way of us getting to know and be like God. 2,000 years ago, Jesus responded very similarly to that little third grade girl when he was questioned. The situation was that Jesus had entered into a social circumstance that was toxic beyond description. A society that embraced a social order that separated people into the classes, whereby wealthy, upper-class people enjoyed standings and rights and privileges and recognition that were denied to the lower classes. And the upper classes engaged in systematic exploitation of the lower classes. A society controlled not only by political and social elites, but also by religious elites who wielded judgment and punishment upon the people unmercifully if they didn't conform to rules and to regulations. A society in which groups of so-called religious people despised each other so deeply that they refused to communicate with each other or even associate with each other. A society so filled with grief and anguish and despair that all hope had been lost for a just and peace-filled life. Then came along this Jesus, a man from Nazareth of all places. And everyone knew to question what good could possibly come out of Nazareth. And sure enough, this man is proving to be a disruptive force. Of all things, he claims to be the Messiah. Yeah. He's got people all confused and he's got them riled up. And he's confronting religious authority every chance he gets. He disrupted the temple courts, driving out the merchants and disturbing the peace. He's telling falsehoods about the priests, and he needs to be arrested and he needs to be put away. So the religious elites schemed about how to trap and discredit him. And so they charge one of their experts in the law to question this one who claims to be here to fulfill the law. "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commands. Yeah, I would argue that Jesus knew us very well. For these two commandments are the ones that we have the greatest difficulty living out in our individual and in our corporate lives. It was true then, and I believe it's true now. In fact, I dare say that for many, the best they do is compartmentalize their obedience to these two commands. For many, the commands apply to only certain aspects of their life. But there are other areas in their lives whereby these commands are relegated to a secondary concern, or perhaps to no concern at all. Historically, we have done this with our theology. We've done this with our dealings with our Christian brothers and sisters, and with our politics, and with how we behave towards all different groups of people. I can't find where Jesus made that distinction, but my observation is that many who wear his name do make that distinction. But this is nothing new. Another expert in the law, in a similar discussion on the very same topic, attempts to justify himself. And he responds to Jesus by asking him, "Who's my neighbor?" Now, we know why the legal expert asked Jesus this question. He heard Jesus' teaching, and he and his colleagues didn't like it much. It was an assault on their social structures, and he had to discredit the implications of this as quickly as possible. Their social structures were well established, their world carefully constructed, and this kind of disruptive teaching just had to be squashed. This teaching was a challenge to the most fundamental religious, political, and social structures that existed. "Then who's my neighbor?" he asks. Well, then Jesus tells a story about a Samaritan of all things. All the dreaded Samaritans. He had to bring them up. We despise those people, these people who are the bottom of the barrel. We don't even look or talk to them. And you could just hear the exasperation in the legal expert's mind when Jesus utters the name Samaritan. Why would he bring them up? Well, the parable speaks for itself. A man is robbed, stripped of clothing, beaten, left on the side of the road to die. A priest passes by, walks to the other side of the road to avoid him. A Levite passes by, walks to the other side of the road to avoid him. A Samaritan comes along, takes pity on him, gives him first aid, transports him to an inn and pays for his continued care. Then Jesus asked the legal expert, "Who do you think was a neighbor in this story?" Now the legal expert's caught in his own trap. There's only one right answer to this question, and it has to be the one who showed mercy. Thus, Jesus' answer to the legal expert about the question, "Who's my neighbor?" the legal expert has to grudgingly admit that it's the one that he hates the most. It's the one that he and his people despised the most. "That's my neighbor." Jesus says, "Go and do likewise." And there lies the crux of our struggle with the two greatest commandments. It is very hard to live into. Let's examine what Jesus says here just a little bit more closely and unpack it. Jesus says, the second commandment is like the first. Now, it's easy to miss the intent and the implication here. What this means is the two commandments are tied together. This is a very uncomfortable thing for many of us to accept. But you cannot pretend to do the first while you don't do the second. You cannot claim to be a lover of God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, if you do not love your neighbor as Jesus has defined him. If you do not do the latter, then you cannot do the former. That is an uncomfortable truth that Jesus speaks. And it's a truth that Satan attempts to distract us from with a host of strategies. Satan works hard at twisting our minds into justifying the worst behavior toward other people, whether it be through persecution or oppression or discrimination or disadvantaging them. Satan will build frameworks of justification around this, just as the legal expert who stood before Jesus attempted to justify himself. Satan's claim is really okay with us claiming that we love God if he gets us to regularly behave like we don't even know God. One of my favorite worship songs we sang last week during worship, it's called We Believe. And the line of that song that grabs my attention every time we sing it, the line is, so let your faith be more than anthems, greater than the songs we sing. It's one thing to pay lip service to God and yet another to behave towards others as if our hearts and our souls and our minds were wrapped up in treating other people like Jesus taught and modeled for us to treat them. I was on my way to work at Lipscomb one day. I drove up I-65 to Spring Hill from Spring Hill, as I do every morning. I got off at Harding Place and was approaching Franklin Road, and I came to stop right there at that light behind a long line of cars that were sitting at that light. And I couldn't help but hear a disturbance behind me, taking place behind me. I looked in my rearview mirror, and there were a couple of cars that were approaching, and they were blaring their horns at each other. One vehicle was a very nice-looking vehicle driven by a gentleman who was accompanied by what appeared to be his son. I think he was bringing him to school. It was that time of morning. The other vehicle was right directly behind me, and it was a small pickup truck driven by a man who looked to be on his way to work. But something had happened further back down the road where the driver of the pickup truck was really upset with the driver in this car. Road rage appears to be a very powerful force. I could see the driver of the pickup truck holding one of those cardboard McDonald's tray holders. You know, he had a cup in it, he had a packaging sitting on top of it, and he, with both hands, threw it out his window on top of the other car as it was passing him. The driver of the car stopped his vehicle right next to mine. I looked over, I saw him, and I looked at his son. And I just looked back at him and I said, don't do it. My window was rolled up. He didn't hear me, and I don't think it would have mattered if he did. I watched him put his transmission into park, get out of his car, walked around behind his vehicle, walked up to the pickup truck, and through an open window began punching the driver of the pickup. The driver managed to get out of the truck, and then an all-out brawl ensued. Now, it wasn't much of a fight. This thing quickly resolved itself because one of the men was much larger than the other one. And he happened to lose his pants during the fight. I will spare you the rest of the details. Some things just can't be unseen. Now, I had some difficulty resolving in my mind how to feel about this event that I had witnessed. Even your shepherds sometimes struggle with how to interpret and think about things that are going on around them. And I have to confess, I had mixed feelings about this event. One voice inside of me says these two kind of deserve each other. But another voice inside of me is in dismay that this is the model of conflict management and human behavior that is all too common in a lost world. But the image of this event that I will never forget has nothing to do with those two. It was when I saw the young boy get out of the car on this very busy roadway and with eyes as big as baseballs watched his father retaliate against this other individual. And I wondered, what will become of him? With this being the model of conflict management and behavior that he grows up watching and learning, what will become of him? I know I'm supposed to pray for these other two guys, but I have many times since prayed for that young boy. And I worry about the younger generation that is growing up in a culture that models conflict management and human behavior as this generation is learning from their parents and from their elders and from religious leaders and from government leaders and the never-ending reporting of it all from the media. So the question to those of us who claim to love God with all of our hearts, with all of our souls, and with all of our mind is this: have we come to know Christ any better? Or do we embody his spirit any better and his teaching? Does that manifest itself? Does it show in the manner in which we love, in the manner in which we behave towards other people, regardless of what context of our lives we're talking about? Or is this just about paying lip service in order to justify ourselves, as was the case with the legal expert who was standing before Jesus questioning him? Are our anthems greater than the songs that we sing? We need to believe that God is watching us when it comes to this question. Have you considered that this is a question that God addresses rather directly in Isaiah? He revealed there that not only has he been watching, but he hasn't been real impressed with what he has seen out of his people. You see, the threat of Assyrian conquest loomed over Judah and Jerusalem during the career of Isaiah, and the prevailing view of this time seemed to have been that so long as the people continued to offer sacrifices and attend solemn ceremonies on holy days, well, they would be guaranteed prosperity and security if they just continued to do that. They were God's people, and they lived as if his protection would remain over them forever. It was sort of an ancient version of manifest destiny. Those people saw a direct correlation between their religious identity and God's ongoing intervention on their behalf. Between them and other nations, their arrogance had led both the priests and the people to pervert worship into some form of control over their God. It became transactional worship. There's an interesting phrase, transactional worship. If we do this, God will do that. And they reduced God into a cosmic vending machine, and they believed that they could behave, if they behaved in a certain way that he liked, then they could go off and do anything else that they like as long as they kept making their deposits. But here's the response of the Lord that he spoke to everyone who believed that lie. The multitude of your sacrifices, what are they to me? Says the Lord. I have more than enough of burnt offerings, of rams and the fat of fattened animals. I have no pleasure in the blood of bulls and goats and lambs. When you come to appear before me, who has asked this of you, this trampling of my courts? Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. New moons and Sabbaths and convocations, I cannot bear your evil assemblies. Your new moon festivals and your appointed feasts, my soul hates. They've become a burden to me. I'm weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Even if you offer many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. Wash, make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Oh, wow. That is some pretty harsh language. In fact, it's so harsh, I'm going to ask us to go back to Jesus' words. I think those are easier to look at. God's people had strayed in a terribly wrong direction, not just with their worship, but with their hearts and with their lives. Their whole range of worship observances had become an ends in and of themselves, as if religious ritual were what God really wanted from them to begin with. And what we come to understand is that worshipful activities can be put in the place of worshipful devotion and understanding of what it is that God really seeks from us. And we can miss the intent of it all and fail to even gain an audience with our Lord because we missed the crux of the matter. And Lord, forgive us, because prophet after prophet was ignored, and finally it took him sending his son to live among us, to be persecuted, to die on a cross, to get our attention. And while he was with us, he said, look, if you want to know God, you need to understand two things. If you want to know what he wants from you, there are just two things. And yet we have struggled and struggled while Satan wrestles for control of our hearts. And Satan builds justification for ignoring or laying aside what Jesus has taught and modeled for us. Too many times, Satan wins that battle. Our mission from Jesus, should we choose to accept it, is to refuse Satan that victory by loving God, loving our neighbor. Yes, Jesus tells us even those we despise and would prefer not even to walk on the same side of the road with, love them anyway. Why? Because that is what God looks like. And if we love him with all of our heart and our soul and our mind, then this is what it looks like. This is how it manifests itself. Now, in closing, I want to tell you that I and my fellow shepherds are so honored to be shepherding this congregation. Speaking for myself, I know that as far as anywhere I have been before, that I love this place so much because of the way that we love other people. What a tremendous blessing it is to be part of this congregation. This past week, I challenged my fellow shepherds to join with me in an exercise. I asked if they would send me 2-3 sentence blessing that they would like to share with you. And I told them that my intent was to allow the Spirit room to work here through this exercise. And I would examine their responses and I would synthesize those responses into a single blessing from the shepherds that I could share with you this morning as part of my comments. Now, at the university, I teach a course called qualitative research, where I teach students how to code qualitative responses, how to bring all that together so that patterns and themes and categories can be identified and understood through that strategy, and those things will emerge. I really felt confident I could do this. I mean, I teach it, right? Having said that, I had no idea how difficult that it was going to be. At one point, I had decided I'd bitten off more than I could chew. And when I examined your shepherds' responses, I was blown away by their individual blessings upon each of you. There was a moment when I realized that I was way over my head in trying to synthesize it all down into one statement. And you know how the human mind works. I began thinking of excuses for why I wasn't going to do what I told my fellow shepherds that I was going to do. Yeah. And wouldn't you know it, it was in that moment of weakness, that moment when I felt most helpless, that was when the Spirit did move. And the Spirit prompted inside of me the realization that I don't have to struggle with this. The themes that the shepherds were communicating to me through their individual blessings upon you were plain as day. And it's best summed up in the words of Jesus that have been sitting on the screen for most of this sermon. Love God. Love your neighbor. And that honestly sums up everything they sent to me. Sometimes I'm a little slow, but Jesus has summed it up. My admonition to you today is hear the words of Jesus.